page 337. Okay, page 337, Pasuk Ches. So let's do, we did the Pasuk already a few times, let's now right away jump into the Radak. The Radak on 337, Nishba Hashem B'Nafshoi, Hashem has sworn B'Nafshoi. What's B'Nafshoi mean? It means B'Atzmoi. Kimo B'Nishbati, V'Chein Asher L'Nosel Hashem B'Nafshoi. Okay, different expressions where Kadosh Baruch Hu means Hashem. We discussed this yesterday. What does it mean? His neshama. The Targum didn't even want to go near this, and the Targum said it means Hashem has sworn b'memre with his words. It's just another expression to mean his koyach adibur. Yet Rashi says it means midas v'kavana. And now we have a third interpretation of b'nafshay means be'atzmoi kmo. Be nishpati v'chein asher lo nosel hashav nafshei. Next, misoev anochi hefech to'avti lishua secha, which means the opposite of I yearn toiv. Here he shepirushoi oiker hasheroshim hefech mashrish. Okay, this we had so many times. This idea that the word, one word, when you manipulate the vowels, it can mean the opposite of one another. And the classic example is what he gives right here is the word yishrosh yisharesh. Yishrosh means to take root, and yisharesh means to uproot. And that's exactly what it says over here, mishoresh. The word mishoresh means oiker hasharoshim. Hefech is the opposite of the word mashrish, when you want to plant and you want something to take root. Here as well, here it says the word misoev. The word misoev is the opposite of the word to'avti, to'av. When we have a patach, instead of a tzere in the aleph, it means to'av, which means I desire, I love, I have a yearning. And when we manipulate the vowel and we go from the word to'av to the word to'ev, it means the opposite. It means to detest. Okay, so this is the word. This is his interpretation. Okay, so we go. It's the opposite. Yonis intergem minabel ana. Yonis is intergem the word minabel ana, which means disgusting. So in other words, exactly what the Radak is saying, but at least over here is giving us some insight that the word, we do not have to go take the, it's not a matter of the Aleph and the Ayin. It is a matter, really, the Aleph and the Ayin, that's not even part of our conversation. The only issue over here is that it's the same exact word, and we have so many times, one word can mean the opposites when we manipulate the vowels. Next, Eskon Yaakov, Zedei Samigdosh. Everyone said exactly the same thing so far. Goin Yaakov is Beis Hamikdash. The Chayin is Goin Yaakov Ashoyev Selah. The Chayin Tegim Yonasan Yas Beis Mikdashah. The Rebu said Yaakov the Beis Mikdashah, the great Beis Hamikdash of Yaakov. Viskardi Perush Biyad Ha'oyev Askir Ir Imanosheha. I will deliver the people with its. I deliver the city with its people into the hands of the enemy. Okay, next. Now we go to the next Radak, V'Hoya Im Yivashu, on page 339. What's going to happen if there'll be remnants? Shimoltu min acherev v'yachbiu b'atzman b'vayis echad, yemusu sham min hadever. V'yasara eina davka el roitzalem ha'radim. Okay, so here he's telling us another insight. Over here, he's telling us over here is that if they will be leftovers from the war, they will die from a plague indoors. And 10 is lav davka. It means any amount, even a large amount, they will all die. Pasuk Yud, Unisao. Here's the hard pasuk. He'll be carried away by his dodo and umisarfai. Dodoi achi aviv, the brother of his father. Umisarfo dodo achi imo. Ka kein pershu kitzas hamifarshim. So we learned this yesterday. That's how some of mifarshim understand the word umisarfo. Means the brother of the mother. The Yesh Mefarshim. Some learn a bit differently. Inyan Sereifa. The Asamech V'Makoyim Sin. We have to interchange those two letters. Uperush Adoni Avizal. Omar. My father says, Oso Ohavo Habol Lishref Besar Hameis Kuroivoi ba'avur horeach, the one that's coming to burn, the relative is coming to burn the besar hames, because it's just, he cannot live with the repugnance, with the harsh odor. Something entirely different than what we have seen so far. The reason why the flesh is being burnt is because it smells, it's foul, the odor is unbearable. And when the odor is unbearable, therefore it has to be, that's why this person chooses to burn the flesh. Is there anyone that needs help? That is why we suffer from this tragedy. Nosim yod lepeh, nispol v'nishtek. Let's put our hand to our mouth to accept it. Oy shloy lishbar leiv adam mirov hadever. Or what it means is, don't tell people. Gam avosh lo yishmu ha'ivim. Okay, then he has a whole an entirely different interpretation. The reason why he's saying put hos means don't let the entire Klal Yisrael know what is going on. Okay, this today is unheard of. Today we live in a world of transparency. Today if there's a problem, everyone has to know all the gory details. And you have to have photographs, and you have to have every bit of information. You have to have reporters embedded in the battlefield to see every move. And here he's saying no. He's saying that people, when they would discover that people are dying in mass, so they would say, Hoss, don't let the report go out to the population, because it will demoralize the people and then there will be no hope for anybody. Okay, there's definitely truth to this, is that not everyone doesn't need to know everything. If you know too much, it's no good. It's not kedai to know everything. I always like to say, is that's the reason why Hashem gave us sleep. Why does a person have to fall asleep? Hashem does not sleep. Hinei lo yonum v'lo yishon shomer Yisrael. So if Hashem does not sleep, why did Hashem create a human being that he need in such a way where he needs to sleep? A human being cannot survive more than 3 days without sleep. What's the pshat? Some people that come to the shir, they can't even stay in 5 minutes. Okay, why is it? That Hashem, the answer is because when you sleep, you don't know what's going on. It's the way Hashem says to a person, your job in this world is not to know everything. Mm-hmm. There are it's things saying, in this world...
Too much information.
Is no good. Is no good. Exactly. So I want to suggest that's the why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created sleep. You know, sleep, people unfortunately, many of us, and I know myself, we have a very big problem even when we're awake. The fatigue, chronic fatigue. Who does not suffer from chronic fatigue? Okay, everyone is trying some kunst to drink coffee, to drink tea, to do this, do that, exercise. All of these kunst, and things that people are doing today is not even so much to be healthy. It's just to have energy. Okay, it's a $1 billion industry out there. What to do, how to live your life so that you have energy. What's the purpose of having the energy? To be awake. To be awake, to pay attention to what is going on, not to just doze through the day, to doze through your life. Why did Hashem create in a human being this koyach, this need for him to sleep? If man is made in the tzelem, Elohim, so if Hashem does not sleep, why does man need to sleep? And the answer is, when you are sleeping, you are not aware of what is going on. That's a reality. You're not aware of what's happening in your environment. And it's a way of Hashem telling you, I made you like this because you don't need to know everything that's going on. But there are times, and this should serve to you as a dogma in your life, not everything in the world do you need to know. There are things that you need to know, there are things that you should know, and you shouldn't be lazy, you should study Torah, you should study the secular, science, whatever is necessary. But it's impossible for you to know everything that goes on in this world. And don't make a mistake and think that that's your role in life. Hashem takes a person, he puts him to sleep periodically in order to shut him out of what's going on in this world. That's the way Hashem made man. And we do see that in ancient times, news was controlled. The media was controlled. And if it's controlled in a responsible way by responsible people, then it's a benefit for society. Today, we don't believe anyone is looking out for our benefits. So therefore, when someone tries to suppress news, right away, there's only one reason. They're trying to hide something that we really should know. That's unfortunately the way we live today. We have no choice. We live in a very, very, strange world. We live in a world that there's a lot of danger. And when someone's...
You see, in Eretz Yisrael, when Chas v'Chalila, someone gets a pogrom, the WhatsApp suddenly send out, this guy got killed, this guy, they're passing the law now.
You're not allowed to do it. It's none of your business.
Until
you get notified. You don't hear in America too. I mean, there's always in America, you hear these, what's called a news gag, where the judge says that no one is allowed to report any information by law. If any newspaper reports any information about a certain sensitive issue in the country, you'll go to jail. And people abide by this. Why? Because it's not to the benefit of the country that people should report what is going on. If there's a responsible, what? Of course, yeah. I'm talking about right, the very rare exceptions when when you have a responsible government, a responsible authority. It's at his discretion when it's correct to suppress information, and that's exactly what the Radak says. The Radak, he learns the pshat in the pasuk. This is a novel pshat. It's not like we've learned until now. The Omar Hos, the individual will say to his friend, silence. Do not let anyone know what is going on. I've come into this home, everyone is dead. There are 10 people, they're all dead. Their bones, their flesh has been burnt, and the bones are going to be buried, whatever it is. If this will go out to the world, to the rest of Klal Yisrael, they will be demoralized. And that will be a greater sakana for the people. If the world finds out about it, it will be a very big chilul Hashem. And maybe it will be a very big sakana. They will discover that we are vulnerable, that we are weak, that we are dying, and they will attack, and they will do things that are harmful. So here you have a pshat in the pasuk, according to the Radak, v'omar hos, there are times during tragedy where it's kedai, it's appropriate to suppress information. No one else said that pshat. We had until now two different pirushim. Hos means remove, does not mean suppress. It means get the bodies out of here. Remove the bodies. If there are bodies, they need to be buried. We don't want disease to spread. They must be buried. The other interpretation we had, which he also says here as well, is silence. Don't complain to Hashem. Do not challenge Hashem's midas hadin. Be matzdik olav es hadin. We deserve what we got. Why do we deserve what we got? Because... Why do we deserve what we got? Because kilola hazkir b'shem Hashem, people, individuals refused to mention to serve Hashem. They did not. Different perushims, all the same idea. Instead of calling out to Hashem, being mispalel to Hashem, they pray to idols. They pray to gods instead of listening to the words of the Nevi'im. They ignore them and they silenced the mention of the Shem Hashem that was transmitted through the prophets.
So they're telling, so he's saying to be silent in terms of complaining.
Correct.
To or about Hashem.
It's not fair to challenge Hashem's justice in this world.
Find something like that with Amram, right?
Vayidoim Aaron. Exactly, excellent. Vayidim Aaron. So you have an interesting why there by Aaron the same word Vayidoim, and why here does it say Hos?
Well, because Aaron had the self control. He could keep quiet without having to be warned to keep quiet. And here, these people are not obviously on that
Madrega. It's a stronger. It's a deeper.
Like shot.
Vayidoim. It's a command. It's a command.
Like shot.
Shot. Right. It's has a command.
He kept his cool.
Well, Vayidoim is from the person's perspective. Has is a command what to do.
Isn't Has also used when a colleague was, when Has
has kolor v'shom.
No, that says by yahas
kolor. It's the same idea. He's silenced. He's same exact idea. Vayas means he's silenced. Exactly what it says. Right. That's what he's saying. It's a command. Has means
shut them up.
Someone else. You're doing it to someone else. Yidaim is to yourself. Has is an instruction or a technique to silence other people. Okay, call it how well he had a technique. What is it? He began to complain. He made believe that he was challenging Moshe Rabbeinu. And in truth, he was just trying to support Moshe, but he got them silent by making believe he was on the other side. Now listen, then he moves on the Yodas. The Yodas over here says, the Yodas I'm taking by the Yit Linei Karive Min Yikeda. They're going to take away their relative from the fire. Le'apoka gar maya min desa, to remove the bones from the house. V'yemar le'div shida de'baisa, and to say to the person that's standing by, le'div shida means the threshold. Okay, he's going to say to the yarkesei. The yarkesei is, I guess, just the corner of the bayis. Ha'oid ka'ani mach, v'yemar safu, no, they're all dead. There's no one alive. V'yemar salek arei kad havoi kayamin, lo havoi masin. Then he'll say back to them, when they were alive. So he learns salek, has, according to the Targum, he learned this yesterday, means remove the dead body. Remove the dead bodies from the bayis, probably because there's disease. With the dead body comes disease. And then he goes on to say, do not complain against Hashem. B'matztik olecho esadin. Arei kad havo kayamin lo havo mitzalan b'shma da Hashem. The reason why this happened is because when these people were alive, they did not daven to Hashem. They could have prevented this had they only had emuna and were mispalel to Hashem. Okay, so we took out, I think the only unique chiddush that we have not come across so far in the Radak is the word, he said over here that the word, the burning, umis sarfoy, means to burn the flesh so that disease does not spread. Or because of the odor, the foul odor, it seems it could very well be that in ancient times there was such a thing where people, they burned flesh. A person died. It's not cremation. Cremation refers to the bones. Liquid, right. So this is a very interesting idea. Liquid, what was the technique? The technique of burial in ancient times? It's not so clear. There are obviously different techniques. But one tekufa we do know for sure is that they would bury a person in a shallow grave temporarily just for the purpose of that the flesh should decompose and turn into the dust as quickly as possible. Okay, so you put it in a special location where there were special conditions that would enhance the acceleration of the decay and of the flesh into dust. When you knew for sure the flesh decayed into dust, you would then open up the shallow grave and collect the bones. Collect all the bones and put the bones in a little box. It doesn't take so much. There's none. All the bones you put together in one little box. Those crypts.
On the left hand side, before you go in.
Yeah.
They have caves.
And in those caves are the bones.
With the bodies laid on the benches?
Yeah, so they put the body in the kuch. They had a big place to put down the body. They put lime over it.
To let the body decay quickly.
How
accelerate the decay?
Then they would take that
summer. They would likut at summers. And in a little cavity.
Yeah.
They put it away. They would save space. Today in Eretz Yisrael, one of the biggest problems is no space for burial. Okay, it's very, very hard to find. There's a shortage. They don't want to go. There's a shortage of cemeteries. So they have all these techniques of burying in stacks, one type of the other. There's a shortage. Likut at summers, to a very large degree, solves that problem. Because
they bury on top of each other.
They bury on top of each other. It's a new thing. But Malika,
it is not. In Prague, in the old cemetery, is like
five stories. Five, okay, in a mausoleum. You go, even the old cemeteries you have over here, they have four or five, some of these mausoleums, they have a whole family. And they're stacked. Their mom is stacked, even today. So but in time of Chazal, what they did was they let the flesh decay, they collect, turn into dust, and the likut means to collect. Likut atzamos. They collected the bones. and they put the bones into a small, very small crypt. And that sarcophagus?
They didn't have to have the skull.
Well, but that's what they call it. The box for the bones.
By the
hotel, of course. Not supposed to bury in Yerushalayim. There's a ban. There's a prohibition to bury, not only bury anybody in Yerushalayim. You don't tell me the holy city. Okay. In any event, but the point over here is, it seems like that in addition to putting lime or putting the body in a certain area where it would decay very quickly, it seems you get the impression. I don't know the details that it was permitted to burn the flesh.
Not mash, but just the opposite, because only if there was a magefa,
then it's dangerous. No, but that's not what, that is what other mefarshim seem to say. He learns here because of the reach. The Radak writes, they could not take the odor. Does that mean the odor is full of disease? Maybe.
Yeah.
Or just does it mean it's uncomfortable?
Because he says it was a devil, it was a magefa.
Okay, so that's where they died. But now that they die, does that mean that the flesh is a sakana? Maybe, yeah. But that's not what he says. He says the reason why they burnt the flesh was because of the reach. They could not tolerate the odor. The odor was just unbearable, so they burnt the flesh. Are you allowed to do that? Okay, we all know that cremation is one of the worst things. Say the organization that they go and they do incredible chesed to prevent cremation. What's so terrible to cremation? Why are you not allowed to cremate a body? It's not so pasha why you're not allowed to do a body. It says in the pasuk, ki kavar tik berenu. It says in the Torah that a body should be buried. Ki kovar tik berenu. It's a mitzvah deraisa. Let's not go in the world of Kabbalah. Okay, Kabbalah, you'll say it's tradition. What's the problem if you burn a body? So it goes back. When something turns into ash, so that's really going back to where it came. It's offer an afer, there's the same word, one is an ayin, one is an ayin, one is an aleph, but in essence, it's really the same thing. What is ash? Ash is just basically, it's been decomposed to its barest, the smallest possible, just dust, just, it's ash, whatever it is. So why really is it also? Well, the Torah says it has to be buried, but maybe when the Torah says be buried, what should be buried? The bones or the basar? What exactly is nichlal in the din of kavur? Over here, what about the blood? Maybe it's the blood. Is it the blood? The Torah was very critical of the earth. The earth absorbed the blood of Hevel. And because it absorbed the earth, it was cursed. Koitz v'dardar. So let me ask you a question. So therefore, if a person has the ability that the blood, the person dies, so don't let the blood, no one's telling the... when a person dies naturally, the blood does not necessarily spill out into the earth. The blood is contained in the body, and very quickly it congeals and it doesn't get absorbed into the body. So these are all questions. I don't have the answers for. I'm just thinking out loud with you. I'm just taking note over here that in this Radak, we have a very interesting pasuk, Umisarfai. Umisarfai, everyone here is clearly struggling for the definition of this word. We learned the first pshat, which we have no source for. It means the brother of the mother. The brother of the mother will enter to go and retrieve the bones. Then we have the interpretation, umisarfai means to burn. What are you burning? You're burning the prized possessions of this individual as a way of saying he's a very great person. Just like a king, the halacha is that they would burn his possessions in order to give honor to the king. So it appears that a person who cares about his relative and wants to make sure that he's buried properly, he's called the umisarfai. It doesn't necessarily mean he burned his assets, but it means he's the one who cares about him. He's the one who has honor, gives him dignity. It's a borrowed expression from the king where they indeed burn their possessions.
Mother,
yeah?
By Yosef is not, this is talks about the bones to take there.
It says they take as atzmoisai. With there, you can interpret it to mean simply is that Yosef says my flesh will decay. That's a given. It's a given. That's only natural. And the only thing that will be left of me when you leave Mitzrayim will be my bones. V'halisemes atzmoisai mizeh. The bones. Obviously, that is what is important. So now the question is: so what about the other parts of the body? Like every so often they have, people have to be reinterred. Sometimes they're buried lechatchila temporarily because of a situation. Someone in Shitome over here, that person died and they wanted to be buried in their regular family plot and they couldn't because it was winter and the roads were flooded and due to technicalities, the cemetery was closed. The cemetery was closed for the foreseeable future. What?
He just Herschel, what's his name? Bach?
Who?
He had a funeral, some relative has died in Baltimore, they were buried.
It was closed, it was flooded. Right.
Oh. They didn't bury him, they buried temporarily.
So now here's the question. I don't know the Haredisha. When the person is buried in a regular place, so now when they reinter the body, do they get every drop of the body that they buried? Is it even possible? Well, they put it in a pine box. So sometimes the pine box could disintegrate. Okay, let's say it's the environment. So can you really? How much dirt are you going to take already? What exactly are the rules and regulations of what when a body is reinterred? What exactly do they collect to reinter the body? So today you'll tell me, well, today they can do every little thing because the box doesn't disintegrate. It's not such a long period of time. But you do have stories where they reinter people been buried hundreds of years ago. Right? They're really trying to go and bring it'll never ever happen, but they argue to take from Meron, Rav Nachman ben Breslov. What do they need him there? Reinter, bring him to Eretz, you're allowed to. The only time you're not allowed to reinter a body is if there's no condition, or you're not going to Eretz Yisrael. But if you're going to Eretz Yisrael, there's the halacha, basically, for a good reason, you're allowed to reinter a body and bring it to Eretz Yisrael. So I read this online. So there are people in the government of Eretz Yisrael that are saying, why can't we just reinter Rav Nachman Mibreslov from Meron and bring him to Eretz Yisrael? From Uman and bring him to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so I'm sure the Ukraine not be very happy. They'll lose all the business. It's millions and millions of dollars. How much millions? So it's a very good kasha. It's a really good kasha. Why don't they reinter Rav Nachman Mibresla from Uman and bring him somewhere, bring him to who knows where? So let's say they would do it. He died, how many years ago did he die? A long time ago. How many hundreds of years ago did he die?
200.
That's it? 200 years? That's it?
He was Ein Kol Hashem.
400 years. So 300 years, fine, whatever it was. So for 300 years ago, what are they going to find there, if they'll find anything? If you're lucky, you'll find some bone fragments. You're not going to find basar. There is no pine box. There is probably no box. They'll probably find, at most, bones. Okay? The bones, we understand, v'halisen es atzmoy sai mizeh. Are you mechuyiv to go and collect the dust, the rekev? The rekev means the dust of a dead body. I don't know. I have no idea. But according to what we learn over all these interpretations, you get the impression, according to at least the Radak, is there such a thing that you're even allowed to burn the flesh? Because if the flesh is a danger, or it's repugnant, it's producing an odor, the flesh is not the ikar. The ikar are the bones. Is that true what I'm saying? Is it not true? It's like Rav Meir says, maybe here it's because the flesh is sakonas nefashas, there's a dever, it's sakana. They're looking into the government, once a person has a rare disease, the government will incinerate the body. They're not going to give you a choice, they're not going to go ask the rabbi to go bury the body. They don't say, this person has a very dangerous, contagious disease, and it is a sakana for the entire country, and we're not going to go bury it, we're going to go and burn the body. That's the only thing that's safe for the country. They're not going to give you a choice. So that's permitted. According to halacha, that's permitted. That's permitted. There's no question about it. Sakana to society. You don't go put the whole world in sakana because of the prohibition. There's a mitzvah deraisa to bury. Ki kavar tik perenu. It's a mitzvah deraisa. But the neshama does need the body. The neshama is nitzri. The neshama will come out. It'll find the body. Don't worry about it. That's not your problem.
Learned at Malachi where one king, his son was Yoshia, where he dragged his father's
bones. Ochaz. Chizkiyahu dragged the bones of Ochaz. He dragged, one of the things that the Chazal gave him high praise, he dragged the bones, some say he actually dug it up. He was already buried. He dug up his own father.
That's easier because Melech is buried in a casket.
He took out the bones and he was mevazeh the bones in front of the whole Klal Yisrael to show, I am not like my father. I am not like my father. I'm not going to follow in his evil ways and worship idols. I'm going to be a tzaddik. I'm going to serve Hashem. And he got high praise. A Rasha is different. Maybe you want to go and say that's all part of the story. Ki loy lahaskir b'shem Hashem. The people here were wicked people, and therefore they deserve what they got, and therefore the rules that apply to them do not apply to the average person. I don't know, I'm just throwing out these ideas. It's a very complicated halacha. What are the rules of the prohibition of cremation? There are people today that go to great lengths to prevent it from happening, and the question is it necessary to go to such great lengths? You hear about stories all the time about people that are now religious, they come from irreligious families, and they're Jewish, they have Jewish from both sides, and then you speak to their children, and the funeral is going to be in 2 weeks, okay, and where will they be buried? Oh, they're going to be cremated. That was their wish. They wanted to be good to the environment. They wanted to preserve the environment.
Yeah.
Or it's just a matter of money. Right. It's cheaper. So then the question is, to what degree is a Shomer Torah Mitzvah Smuchuyev to persuade them, to work with them, and to raise money, if that is what it's all about, if it's about money, and to persuade them that the body should not be burnt, the body should be buried. Ki kovar tikberenu. Now, I know you'll show me in Sifrei Kabbalah, that it's the worst thing in the world possible to cremate a body. It's the world mamish coming to an end. But the Sifrei Kabbalah is not the Sifrei Halacha. So in the Sifrei, if a person is buried beautifully, have all these beautiful things to say about the mile of the body is buried. But in the world of Halacha, is not the world of Kabbalah. You're not necessarily mechuyif to pay even $1 to fulfill what it says in the world of Kabbalah. There are people that this means, right, in a chanali, but you know, maybe instead of giving the money, raising thousands of dollars, raising the money for this, give the money for Tomche Shabbos. Give the money for Jewish education. Is it really Kedai? What are the guidelines of how far a person is mechuyif to go in order that a body should not be burnt? Yeah, there are. They work, they give a lot of money. $100 is a beautiful, beautiful thing. Because there are people that are willing to give this money. And these people, certainly they give money to everything else. But when a push comes to shove, when you're just the average guy, and you know someone in your workplace who's Jewish and is completely irreligious, and they tell you that they're going to burn their cremate their father, and you have no access to these organizations. When you call these organizations, they say, "I'm sorry, you know, we just don't have any more money. We're booked. We have limited resources, and now it's just a matter of you. Are you mechuyev to give this guy $5,000? $3,000 not to go cremate his father? Are you? To what degree do you have an obligation?" To what degree do you have an obligation to even to speak to him, to try to persuade him? By trying to persuade him, he'll get annoyed at you. It might affect your relationship with him. What are the guidelines? It's not at all clear at all. It's really not clear. There are people that this means a lot to. They really, really eats them up. And they go to extremes in terms of money, in terms of all different types of chesed. That's beautiful. If you want to do it, do it. But I'm not from that machane. I was never. I don't have those sensitivities. Well, that's okay. It's very, very complicated. There's a lot of tinik shenishba. The people
asking that person might have done the way they answer that you do is. is that he might have done tshuva because he didn't push the button. The question becomes on the person who pushed the button. If it's
why did he want cremation? Is it because he's an atheist? He doesn't believe it's a lahachis?
Usually that's the case.
Okay, that's a different story.
I think it's
Shishba.
I have a little experience with this.
Yes.
Firstly, it's a very good book.
Yeah.
I have some experience with this. And there's a book out. It's by Rabbi Kornbluth. It's very... you can buy it in his farm store, and he speaks about the whole thing, and he takes it as a very, very secular way. He's a big Ben Torah. The reasons for cremation is because some people feel that there's not enough ground, there's not enough
earth.
Land. Earth. So it goes to show you how the cemeteries in all of the world together have much less than 0.5% of the earth. And then he shows you that when Walmart opens up a store, they have thousands of parking, and each one, each one is a kever, and nobody came out against Walmart making a parking lot. And then he said that that it's very bad for the environment. He said, no, it's not true.
It's worse when you bury cremation. There's more carbon emitted into the environment.
Yes,
than
yes.
Yeah, but forget about all that. These are all practical. Let's talk about... To what degree?
I don't know if you discussed it, but you should do it, you know.
It appears it's a mitzvah saseh. It's nothing more than that.
But a big reason why people want to be cremated is because they say, nobody's going to visit me anyway.
Okay.
That's true.
That's a very, very big reason why people say. And to what extent?
That's the big question. Yeah.
Whatever you get, if you're the rogue.
Everything.
We are so careful about cemeteries and this. What is the oldest cemetery? There is not a cemetery which is 2,000 years old.
So where are all the bodies? Where are all the Jews who died there in Poland? Where are they?
Yeah.
Where are all the Jews in Russia? There were millions of people. What happened to them? Where is the cemetery?
It's
mass graves?
If you go on the trips, it also was an ancient cemetery.
I don't know the answer. I don't know. It's very interesting. What happened? I do not know. It's a very big mystery. And the only thing I want to point out is this word is a piece of the puzzle. This is a very unique word, umisarfoi, which all the mefarshim say it has to possibly mean burning, interchange the samach for the sin, and now good luck try to figure out what that means. Does that mean that there's some type of permission in a certain situation where you can burn something? Well, the radak...
You're not reading the whole pasuk. The pasuk is talking that he tells him, his uncle, whatever you want to... Are you the only one that survived, or are there other dead people?
Well, we had many different ways.
Call it a mass casualty incident.
Okay, there are a lot of mefarshim. Everyone has a different way to read the pasuk, but the word umisarfo, depending upon how you learn the pshat in the pasuk, does relate to the concept of burning. And the question is, burning? What are you burning a body for? What's going on over here? Well, who's burning who? You're burning his possessions. You're burning the body itself. The body was burnt because there was a fire here. What is going on over here? Everyone is struggling. There's disease. There is danger. There is odor. The body has to be burnt so the living don't get sick. What is going on over here? I don't know. Everyone over here is struggling to try to understand the word of Misarfo. And then when you look in modern times, in modern society, there's something called cremation. If the whole world is doing cremation, there must be a reason. Okay, the goyim, not all the goyim are shaitim. If they have a reason, there's a reason why they're doing it. They feel they're accomplishing something with burning it, with sreifa. So we have to know, is this correct in halacha? Is it not correct? Well, obviously it's not correct, because the Torah says, ki kovar tik berenu. This is a mitzvah asay that every body must be buried. It is also very interesting that pasuk only appears where? By a person that's chayiv misas bezdin, a person who is a Russia, a person that a terrible avera, he did tshuva l'chayra, okay, he did tshuva, we hope he did tshuva before he died, misas bezdin, and that person must be buried. We do find that Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, we find, were buried. We find that with the Avos, we find that Kalev went to visit the Kivrei Avos. So we do find things, but you have to know, is this a mitzvah d'oraisa? We don't find anywhere in Tayag mitzvahs there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to visit a kever on a yard site. That's not one of the Tayag mitzvahs. There's not one of the Tayag mitzvahs to go to Beis HaKvaros to visit the kever. Is there a mitzvah to bury? Yes, there is. Ki kavar tikberenu. But that's it. How? And then we do know that in time of Chazal, there was something called likut atzamos. We're not even concerned about the basar. We're concerned about the bones. So does that mean that the kavur is only on the bones, not on the basar? And the basar indeed can be burnt? I don't know. I don't think it's clear anywhere. You look at all of this farm. Okay, we didn't do the Malam yet. We didn't say that. Let's go to the Malam. Okay, we're running out of time. Let's do the Malam. Let's go to the Malam. Let's finish the Radak. Okay, we didn't go to the Malam yet. The Radak first is, we have to finish the Radak. We have to go on page. Oh, no, that's it. That's it. We are finished with the Radak. Now, let's take a look at the Malam. The Malam Pasik, starting with Pasik, Ches. Going back to Pasik Ches in the Malam. Let's see. Turn the page. Back to 3:36, Nishba Hashem b'nafshay b'ritzoynay. Another translation: Hashem's desire. Ki ritzoynahu apoyel akol. A person's desire is what controls everything. Misoev anochi esgon Yaakov she'en li od ratzon. I have no desire. He translates the word misoev means I detest. I have no longer a desire. Esgoin, the pride of Yaakov. This back on page 3:39. So he's learning Misoev means to hate. Okay, like we learned in the Radak and the Mefarshim, Yal Yidei Kach, Sonesi, Aram, and Oysav, the Hiskir, Ir, Umaloya, Biyatam, because I did not have any desire for Yaakov, I'm going to deliver the city, the palace, in the hands of the enemy. Pasik Tas, in the Malbim, Vahoya, Kim, Yivashra, Sar, Nashem, if it will be, if there's going to be 10 people left over, Ashalo, Yahargem, Hoye, Vehem, Yisharu, Babai, Sechad, L'mashal av v'tisha banim v'meis kulam al yidei hadev v'shiyah bo'ir. So he says over here that there's going to be no survivors. Anyone that survives the war will die from a plague. Pasuk yud v'unisao dodo mitzayer she'ov ubana v'echad haru'uyim liyosha kulam meisu badever. So here he's coming. The Malbim is the only one here on the page that's coming to explain why we mentioned the uncle. This was the first topic that we began with when we started discussing these psukim. What in the world is this thing, the uncle? Well, uncle Mandekar Shemei. So the Malbim explains, who here has died? 10 people. Who were the 10 people? A father and his 10 children, and his Yarshim, including his Yarshim. Father, his children, the Echov, his brothers. The brothers that would fit to Yarshim him. The next generation, and his contemporaries. Kula mesu badever. Velo yishoer koroiv sheitapel b'mesim l'karvam, to bury them. V'sheyirash es habayis, to inherit his assets. Hanishar. V'yes hanachasim rak doidoi shel bal habayis. The uncle. K'moy shekoso v'im ein loy achim u'nisatem es nachlaso la'achei aviv. V'hu yiso oiso l'kvo, he will bury him. V'hu yiyagam kein misarfo. Before we read that word, let me just, let's explain what the significance of what he's saying, why it says the word doidoi. Doidoi means, basically, there's no one else. Who cares about you? Who cares about you? Your 7 closest relatives. Who are the 7 closest relatives? Your parents, your children, and your brothers and sisters. That's the halacha. Who does a person sit? Who does a person sit shiva for? He sits shiva for his father. He does not sit shiva for his uncle. Uncle and you don't sit shiva for. He sits shiva for a parent. He sits shiva for children, for brothers and sisters. If these are the people for whom a person has to mourn for, it means this is your world. Vizehu. That's it. That's your orbit. That's your world. When it says here in the pasuk, the dodo, you know what that means? It's trying to emphasize the tragedy. It's not just that a person died. If a person dies, he'll have a legacy. Who will carry on his legacy? His children, his sons, his daughters, his brothers, his sisters, his parents. They will make sure his name is not forgotten from this world. They will make sure that he carries on a legacy. But when a person doesn't have children, doesn't have siblings, doesn't have parents, it's over. His world has come to an end. Who then is going to be the next person that will come and just clean up the loose ends, clean up the dust? His uncle. The uncle is just basically, according to the Malbim, and according to he proves this from the Torah, is a way of saying that you got nobody. You got nobody. There's no one out there. Your world, your whole world has come to an end. And now things have to be taken care of. Someone has to go sell the house. Someone's got to go and bury him. So we call in. You call in. So today you'll call in Ms. Askim. You'll go call an emergency organization. You'll call 911. And they probably have some type of service that will come and pick up the body and bury it in who knows where. And free burial society, right? Wherever it is. There's a free burial, whatever it is. So the word dodo is basically that free burial society. It's that government service, 311 service, that will take care of a person when there's no one else to take care of a person. The Torah's word dodo is bigamatria 311. Okay, city 311. That's really what it means, because in ancient times there were no services from the city. So who then did it fall upon? Who did the authorities say, listen, you're a relative, you're an uncle, take care of it. Why should I take care of it? What do I have to do with him? Take care of it. That's the way society is. They have to call him to do it. If they would not call him on the phone, he wouldn't do it. Because it's not my world. You get stuck because you're the closest of kin. That's how the Malbim comes to explain why it says here, doi doi. Okay, now you want to take that further, that idea further. This is what we discussed. Where did Moshe Rabbeinu come from? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come from nepotism. Amram took as a wife, Vayika, he took his dodo. He took his aunt. He married out. Okay, most people in ancient times, and even today among Hasidim, they keep the goods in the family. You marry your cousin, very common. Today they can't do it because it's not healthy. It's a big problem today. It's not healthy, so therefore they have no choice but to marry out. It's much healthier. What? They marry their relatives. You know who you're dealing with. Okay, you know, this is what was done in ancient times. And ad kedei kach, there's even a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah. Charity starts at home. You got a niece, she needs a shidduch, so you marry her. Okay? Instead of going and running around the whole world looking for shidduchim, can you imagine if people were allowed to marry their cousins? If it was not, can you imagine really, seriously, if it was not a health issue at all, it would solve the shidduch problems right away. People would probably, I'm imagining, would probably marry cousins. You know them, you grew up with them. I mean, obviously not every situation, but it would definitely change the dynamics of shidduchim in the Jewish world and in the Goyish world, for sure. Because your cousin is a cousin, you're a lot in common, you come from the same. We can't do it because Hashem made it such that it's just not healthy. It's a sakana. It's a very big sakana. It's a very big sakana. And it's shocking how you find some Hasidim, they do this, and they don't take into consideration that they tell you, they go to the doctors, they have all of the exams done. Yeah, I'm not so sure it's always true. Not so sure they always do it. Yeah, it's not. But it's a shocking thing. But it's an amazing thing. Then there is something when you marry L'shem, you marry Mamish out. You marry L'shem Shemayim. You marry... Moshe Rabbeinu is a product of Amram marrying someone outside of the family. What is called outside the family? A dod, an uncle. An uncle by him, he can't marry an uncle, he marries the equivalent of an uncle, dodo, so he marries an aunt. The Radak here, the Malam over here, is teaching us a powerful yisoid. He's being medayik, he says very clearly what is this idea. Who has died here? A father, a son, and a brother. Okay, and we're assuming that this person who died, his father already died. If he dies, that means his father already died before. So, and therefore, he's basically saying, this person's world has come to a complete end. This is the Chorban. This is Chorban. And therefore, you know how I know it's a Chorban? Because the one that's coming to bury him is not the son, not the brother, not the father. It is doi doi. That, when you hear this, unisao do do, you collapse. Because it means the Chorban is so great, there's no one to say Kaddish. No one. There's no one that will be around to leave over a zecher for this person. Wow, that's the malchus of a dodo. Of a dodo. That's an amazing concept. That's what dodo is. And now and try Klal Yisrael. How does Klal Yisrael come about? The Moshiach and Shel Yisrael. When you care about someone outside of your family. Moshe Amram brought into this world Moshiach. Moshe is the Moshiach. Shlach Nabiyat Tishlach. Moshe was the Mashiach. I'm sending you. Pekosh Bekadati. He saved Klal Yisrael. How does the Mashiach come into this existence? When the previous generation cares about someone else. They just don't care about themselves. It's not a world of nepotism. Who gets the job? My own child. My own brother. My own family. Amram, you know what? Let me do chesed with someone outside the family. Who is outside the family? An aunt. Aunt is a symbol. It's not just that she was an aunt, because the aunt is outside your seven closest relatives. Okay? Anyway, you're not going to eat. It's an arayis. It's an Arab, but it's symbolic. It's symbolic. Doida soy is a code word. Amram, he married L'shem Shemayim. Getting married, they always tell you in when they try to convince boys to get married, that getting married, you're doing a chesed. Marriage is all about chesed. If you look at marriage as selfish, now, what am I in a shidduch? What am I getting in this shidduch? If that is your attitude, it is a marriage that is doomed to disaster. Right? They read you a shidduch and you say to the shadchan, so what am I getting here? What am I getting in the shidduch? Am I getting money? Am I getting yichus? Yes. Am I getting yoifi? Am I getting am I getting this? What am I getting? What are you offering me by proposing this shidduch? So the shadchan says, if that's your attitude, what are you getting? Then you don't know the first thing about marriage. First thing about marriage is, what are you giving? What do you have to offer? What are you giving someone else? In this marriage, what are you bringing? How are you going to do chesed with someone else? Amram, by the Torah telling us that he married doidoso, and the word doidoso is a code word for someone outside your own immediate orbit, is teaching he had the right attitude in life. His attitude is, it's not about me. The whole world doesn't revolve around me. I'm here to serve someone outside my orbit. What was the alternative? He doesn't have an alternative. It's symbolic. Before Matan Torah, maybe. Before Matan Torah, that might have been an option. That is correct. That is correct. We do find, Yaakov Avinu married two sisters. The Shvatim, Chazal tells, they married twin sisters. They were born with sisters. Okay, before Matan Torah, it was definitely not. Look, we find Moshe by Yivku al Mishpechoitzav. Moshe Rabbeinu, after he gave the Torah, it says, Boichel le Mishpechoitzav. They all get divorced. Why do they all get divorced? They were married to their sisters. They were married to who knows what, to people that they were not allowed to marry. It says Beferish in Pasek. So maybe Amram did have an opportunity. Maybe before Matan Torah, like other people, we do know as a fact, he had an opportunity to marry his twin sister. He had an opportunity to marry his own sister. Who knows? Opportunity to marry, I don't know the exact parameters of what he was able to marry. But here it says, but forget about that. The fact that the Torah uses the word doidosoi, and the word doidosoi is used in the parsha of Geula. The Hoyim Lo, it says in the parsha, he quotes this, the im'ein loy achin. If a person does not have any brothers, he sells his assets. He sells his assets, and there's no one that can come along and redeem the assets and save him. Then it says, "Unisatemis nachlaso." I don't know. He dies. He dies. In this case, is where he dies. A person dies, and now where will it go? Birusha. It says, "Unisatemis nachlaso lachayaviv." And there's no relatives. Oh, there are no relatives. You're all alone. Okay, it's going to go to an outsider. Who will the outsider be? Oh, the close of kin, but it's still called an outsider. So it's a code word for entering into a marriage with the attitude, life is not all about me, it's about you, I am here to serve. When you have that attitude, what comes from that? What's the product of such a marriage? Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is the Moshion Shel Yisrael. Okay, the Churban Beis Hamikdash only occurred because of Sinas Chinam. What is the root of Sinas Chinam? I couldn't care less about you. I only care about myself. What's in it for me? That's Sinas Chinam. And therefore, that's why there's Churban. Moshion Shel Yisrael is Doi Doso. And look at the pasuk here. Unisao Dodo. It's the concept that the Malbim is coming to bring out. It all goes together. Next. Now he goes on to, now he begins to tackle the content of the misarfa, this very strange word. What gam kein hu misarfai, shehu yisroif ho'atzamais. Okay, he doesn't apologize, he doesn't say that he's going to burn the possessions, it doesn't say there's a reach ra, there's a foul odor, there's disease, he says it straight out. This relative will come now, and it doesn't say that, like Rabbi Mitzuda seemed to say that there was a sreifa, The house burned down, so Mamela, or the enemy, that the enemy took everyone into the house, and they torched the house, and everyone in the home was burnt. So now come along people to clean up, they pull out the bones that were not burnt, and they bury the bones. No. That's not what their Malbim says. The Malbim doesn't mince words. It says here, Umisarfo, your relative comes, there's a dead body, he picks up the dead body, and he burns the body. He says here, Shehu Yisroif Ehoatzamos Kemosha Kosov in Shmuel Vayikhu Ez Givias Shaul Vayishrifu Oisam. They burnt it. They burnt the body of Shaul and Yehoina's son.
Yeah, but that was different because the Plishtim hung his body up on doors and the body, little of the flesh, had rotted out by the time they were
left. So what? Today, you ever see Rahman al-Itzlan? Rahman al-Itzlan, you ever see these pictures on this Askim? On a scene in Eretz Yisrael when there's a Rahman al-Itzlan, a terrorist attack, they collect every mashu of blood, of flesh, and they get the highest praise. The world is in awe of them. The kavod habriyos, the dignity that every mashu of human flesh has to be buried with dignity, and they get the greatest praise, the greatest kiddushim shemayim. So they couldn't do that for Shaul.
No, they couldn't.
Why not?
Because it was a danger. It was a danger of plague at that time.
Oh. You're adding words. You're adding words. No, you're adding words into the. Okay, so maybe today they do things that we, maybe today the standards have changed. There are things that we are doing today that are due to circumstances, we do it a little bit different today. But may ikur hadin, according to the letter of the law, maybe there's something that is permitted. I don't know. And if it is true that may ikur hadin it is permitted, what is the nafka mina? The nafka mina is that for chmona litzlan, there is an irreligious person who is being cremated, who says, to what degree are you obligated to prevent it from happening? We know there's a mitzvah deraisa ki kavar tikvarenu, but we also have indications here in Chazal that there is something to burning the body. How do we reconcile these two? The Radak seems to differentiate between the basar and the atzamos. Is everyone learn like that? You know, we're not doing it today, don't get me wrong. And there are organizations that are extremely generous and they work very hard to raise very significant amounts of money to prevent this from happening. But not in every situation is it possible. And the question arises, to what degree? Well, if you ground it and you know what is the ikur and what is the tafel, it makes a very big nafka mina and where you devote your resources when the situation is such you don't have enough to go around. Okay, I am sure there are different degrees of cremation.
No,
it's always the zelbazach, same thing.
What they do, if you want to pay special, they grind it afterwards to make sure that it's not. They don't bother with it. So atzamais need kavura also.
Is there such a thing today in the modern world as what is the equivalent of liquid atzamais? Is where they would just, the flesh would decay and they would just collect the bones?
Bury just the bones?
Is there such a thing?
Also,
such a thing?
You take someone from one cemetery to another.
That's the only thing. There's no like service. There's no service where they were they able to do something in
a
funeral home.
The Chinese did it when they took these bodies from the prison.
They take chemicals.
The chemicals.
I once read chemicals. There are certain times they have chemicals. They pour chemicals in the body and it causes just
they
the basar, just the basar. Okay, so there is such a thing today. There is such a thing of where they do. It's probably much more expensive, right? It's
but
even more expensive.
The whole issue that you're touching on, there's a chiyuv of klura, but the chiyuv of klura is not necessarily what we do. For example, you have nephilim that are mechuyev klura because they shouldn't be metama.
Okay.
No one says that you have to have a separate kaver. You can have one kaver where you use medical waste or whatever you put it in there.
Right, correct.
And we hope make a metzavah, you don't need a metzavah.
That's right.
Metzavah you need just to the kayin shenal. If you have a cemetery that the whole cemetery has a wall,
100%.
Look, you don't need individual matzavah.
Yeah, well, I'll just say this later. We'll do this next time. I had a story. I had someone came. We had in the backyard. There was like a little shed, not a shed, like an awning to go down to the basement door, and it decayed, and there were termites. It was horrible. So I hired a guy for a few dollars to demolish the whole thing, and to get rid of it. So he comes, he demolishes the whole thing, he puts it in these heavy duty garbage bags, and then I realized that on this little entranceway there was a mezuzah. There was a mezuzah in a metal case, which I actually had checked not that long ago, maybe a couple of years ago, and it was kosher. It was sitting in the freezing cold, as totally outdoors, in a metal case. There's a mezuzah, and I remember I checked it was kosher, it's still there. So I forgot to take the mezuzah off this little thing before he demolished it. And now sitting in the backyard are about, I don't know, 5-6 bags of the debris of this wood that decayed and rotted full of termites and smells and is disgusting. And in there, somewhere in there, is the mezuzah in its metal case. So I went to the rabbi and I said to him, am I mechuyev to go through the bags to get out to find the mezuzah? And it's just very unpleasant to do this. It's very unpleasant to go and I should go spend the time doing this. I don't want to do it. What's the halacha? So he said to me, if it's in the metal case, what's going to happen to all this debris? They're going to take it to a landfill and they're going to dump it. They're going to bury it. So that's geniza. So he says, it's not likely that the mezuzah is going to be in this baza anymore. You're afraid a bulldozer will run over the case and the case will shatter and will cause it. Even that, it's indirect. It's much more likely that these five or six bags of garbage will be taken away to a landfill somewhere, buried deep down in the ground and covered. What do you think Geniza is? If you have Seamus, what do you do with Seamus? You have a nice fancy cemetery and you put it about Seamus? Until recent times, very recent times, you know where all the Seamus went?
Yeah.
To the same place where all the garbage went. Exactly, it was a lot of scandals, and the people that were going, the only difference maybe was they take the garb, the Seamus, exactly the same place, but before they pour upon it the diapers and all the other waste in the landfill, they would put down just like a sheet. They go very, very deep, and they just dump it, the Seamus, b'derech b'zayon, they don't pack it nice boxes and everything, just dump everything. And then they just put down I don't even know what they put down. They put down some piece of plastic, not even that. They don't even want plastic because it's not good for the environment. They put down some shmata on top of it. And on top of the shmata, they put all the garbage on the street that you throw out, that you see over here on Avenue J. The same garbage and that goes on top of it. So is that correct? Yeah, is that a bizarre to the Seamus? No. That's okay. That's perfectly fine. Today, the people don't like that, so they do much better. Now they have private cemeteries for Seamus only in the Catskills. It became a lot better today. So he said to me, the mezuzah is in a metal case. It's very likely the mezuzah, it's not going to be broken into smithereens. And even if it does, it's not your problem. It's in Geniza. In those five bags, that's the Geniza. It's okay. You're not mechuyev. You want to be mahadar, very nice. You give a mahadar. But it's not Geniza. Okay, you hear stories, someone loses a pair of tefillin. I don't really understand this. Someone loses a pair of tefillin, and you see the whole, all the yeshivas are out. Okay? They go and they go. They travel for 3 hours to the landfill, and they all dig it up to go find the Peretz Tefillin. Really, are you really a mechuyet mevatel from Torah? You have nothing better to do to go send all of these kids out of yeshiva to go to a landfill to dig up and to go search in the garbage. Sakana fin will get sick going in contact with all the schmutz. And you have nothing better to do? Are you mechuyev to go this? The tefillin are in the landfill. The tefillin are in Geniza. So it's in Geniza.
The same thing.
To me, I don't understand. What a kiddush Hashem. To what lengths people are willing to go into the garbage, to go dig up the give with the tefillin. Does this make any sense to you? It doesn't make sense to me.
It's an emotional thing.
It's an emotion. But ad kedei kach? How far do you go? How far do you have nothing better to do? Ad kedei kach. So when it comes here as well to this issue of burning, we have to get to the root of what is going on over here. What is going on? What exactly is the mitzvah of kavura? What is the prohibition of sreifa, bizui hames? In Yoni Kabbalah or in Yoni Kabbalah? I don't think halacha doesn't always enter into that world. But sometimes it does. It's obviously not the right thing to do. But you have to know what is the makar. So when you have a shayla, you have to know how to deal with the shayla in a responsible way and not with exaggerations and mishigasim. Okay, stop eating a short break.